The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of this station, the university, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this show, visit kuci.org. You're listening to 88.9 KUCI in Irvine with Bill Brooks, University of California Master Gardener. Today we've journeyed to Catalina Island to visit the Catalina Island Conservancy's Ackerman Native Plant Nursery. Even though we're only 19 miles from Orange County, there's a big difference in the plant life on Catalina Island. It feels like we're a world away when we're actually not. So I'm here with Ryan Murdoff and Monica Tidlaska. So Ryan, I'm going to start with you. Could you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your role here at the Conservancy Nursery?
Absolutely. My name is Ryan. I started here about 8 months ago. I just moved here from Oregon, where I'd been working with the Forest Service as a botanist. My title here, I am the plant conservation manager for invasives, but I'm also acting mostly for the natives as well, with Monica here as well. A lot of what we do here, we have restoration work, we have seed collections, invasive work, and then we really look at different things to try and restore the island in different ways.
Thank you, Ryan. And Monica, tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Monica Tidlaska. I am the Native Plant Program Lead Technician. I've been on the island a little over 3 years now. I was born and raised in San Diego County, and I came to the island as a kid and sailed here a few years ago and thought it was an amazing place. And surreptitiously, a year later to the hour, I moved to the island with the job in hand. And it's been an amazing experience to work in plant conservation and work on this island.
Fantastic. And I know this island and islands in general are special places. And there's an island effect, or Forester's Rule, as it's called, that affects both plant and animal species. Can one of you talk to us a little bit about this effect and what it does to plants?
Sure. One of the fascinating things about islands is that due to their isolation from the mainlands or other islands, it can affect not only animals but also affect plants dramatically. The island effect can be seen in plants on this island like our Eriogonum giganteum giganteum, which is our commonly known as the St. Catherine's Lace. This plant does have a ancestor back on the mainland that's the Eriogonum fasciculatum that is the California buckwheat. And the plant on the mainland, when you see it in Orange County, will have these very narrow needle-like leaves and is more of a shrub-sized plant. But here on the island, due to lack of predation or other effects over generations, potentially centuries, the plant has grown to be a gigantic plant in size, and also its leaves are much larger than the mainland plant. They are almost sometimes the size of a small kid's hand. The island effect can also affect other species due to lack of predation or other things. So species can lose some of their predatory abilities to keep from being predated on. And one example is our toyon species here on the island is like the toyon you would find in LA County, but even the sharp pointy bits around each leaf has been diminished, and also the thickness of the leaves have been diminished. And so you can really see how even plants that either have become their own species or are like species you have on the mainland do have an island effect.
Wow, that's amazing, because toyon are being used more and more in our landscaping throughout Southern California. I understand that there's certain plants that are endemic to Catalina. Can one of you give me an example of what it means to be an endemic plant, and maybe an example of a plant?
I'll take this one. So most of it, we have different types of endemics. We have endemic plants that are only found on our island, and then we have endemic plants that are found kind of throughout different islands of the Channel Island groups. So we have some that connect to the northern Channel Islands, and then some that connect only to the southern Channel Islands. So I like to talk for the endangered stuff that we have. So the Cercocarpus traxii, which is the Catalina Island mountain mahogany, a long title. That's one that's only found on our island, and there's 7 left in the world. And then we have the Cybera.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing.
It's found in, well, I'll not say that. And then we have the Cybera filifolia. And that's when we are working on a collaborative group with other islands, and it's found, I think, on Santa Cruz and then San Nicolas of the Channel Islands, but it's also, you know, endemic to the island. So they have endemic to the island and then endemic to the island group. And then we do have stuff that, you know, there are a few ones that are shared with the mainland.
Well, that's amazing. A plant found nowhere else in the world. And I think that's what is so special about us being here today, is that we get to talk about these plants and perhaps learning a little bit about what you do that we can apply to our own home gardens. So in the days of exploration from the 1600s to the 1700s, I know sailors would often populate islands along their route with non-native plants and animals like goats and pigs. So the sailors would then have a place to restock their sailing ships as they explored. Goats and pigs have been removed from Catalina Island, and during their lifespan on this island, what effect did they have on Catalina's plants?
The pigs, the goats, and some of the other larger wildlife that we've had on the island, cattle included, have had a huge effect on ours. A lot of it, just being on the ground, making the soils more compacted, makes it harder for a lot of seedlings to grow up. And then some of the areas with overgrazing, they actually pretty much, I'd like to say, denuded the island for a lot of the slopes and stuff like that. So erosion, which is a problem on most islands, especially down here, without the vegetation on them, we have a lot of erosion.
Yeah, the pigs I know used to actually
uproot,
almost rototill and
yeah.
dig up the landscape, which really played havoc on the native plants.
So each one had a different kind of, I guess, vice. Some really liked to like deep root and then uproot some of the trees and stuff like that, where other ones went after seedlings.
So it really did affect the land, and that had a huge effect on the plants. And so I know the mission of the Conservancy is to be responsible steward of the lands throughout the balance of conservation, education, and recreation. One of your main conservation efforts is this native plant nursery that we're interviewing from today. Can you tell us a little bit more about what is done at the nursery and what you do and how you get these plants back to establish the island more to like it was 100 or 200 years ago?
Yeah, so the Ackerman Native Plant Nursery was built in the 90s. It was built during the time where the goats and the pigs were being removed from the island, and it was built to help restore the restoration efforts of this island through doing extensive seed collections in the past and still into the future, and to help with doing larger scale propagation of native plants, and also for storage of the seeds collections for longer terms. Today at the Ackerman Native Plant Nursery, we house over 2,000 seed collection records in a cold storage that's a walk-in cooler that has spanned over 25 years and represents approximately 50% of the native species on Catalina. Some of these seed collections include some of the most rare species that are species of concern, whether they're listed because their numbers have been brought down from grazing and other human introduced effects, or are rare plants that are found only on various Channel Islands or are endemic to this island as well. And we also have the native floras of Southern California species that are found on this island also banked
wow.
here. So that in case of another fire like we had in 07, where I believe it was 12% of the island burned, we can have a seed bank that we can take seeds out of storage and then restore on a larger scale seeds from that. And also for smaller scale restorations, we're hoping to work to do specific areas of restoration starting in watersheds where the water
okay.
from one part of a hillside down into the valley where a stream may flow sometimes of year up into the other part of a hill, and start with individual watersheds to do restoration. And we hope that through work with our collaborations internally with Ryan and his team of the invasive plant team, removing plants that are non-native from an area and then going in and restoring that area with plants that we've grown here and are from seed collections that we've done on island, and also through the collaborations like Ryan was talking about with other Channel Islands to work on the rarest of the rare listed species to restore those plants as well.
Well, that's absolutely amazing, and what a mission that you do. So I'm certain that there's a lot that you do with your propagation here that perhaps the home gardener could do as well. So talk a little bit about how you gather seeds and cuttings to propagate native as well as endemic plants.
We gather seeds of the common species as well as the endemic rare species, like I was talking about before, for conservation on this island and also for horticultural research purposes. The common gardener definitely can go out and collect seeds. A lot of the species, like the white sage and the black sage, have been in bloom in the spring and early summer and are now seeding actively in the fall. And those are great species that have a very floral scent to them and also are very easy to collect from and propagate. They don't need any special treatment. Some plants are used to having fire as a way to help crack open the seeds, and so those obviously are more difficult species to grow. But the most important thing is just when you go out to seed collect, make sure that if you are going onto someone else's property, not necessarily your own, mm-hmm. to make sure that you have the approval to do it. And as you would on any location that you would go to, stay on the trails, stay to, you know, what your abilities are, and do collections where you've gotten the approval, just like you would go out deer hunting or mm-hmm. boar hunting in Southern California. There is sometimes a season for deer hunting, but there's also different seasons for different plants that you may want to collect on different properties.
So that would enable me to be able to grow California natives and then plant them in my yard, which is going to be better for the environment because the space my house is taking up is now I've returned that to what naturally lives there. So with something like buckwheat, when it's in bloom in the spring, I would take a baggie out and collect some of the dying flowers and shake the seeds out. Is that the way I would go about doing that?
That's definitely one of the techniques that we also use here is we actually take pillowcases. We're doing sometimes such large collections. And also I found the pillowcases out and I've retrofitted some with a net around the outside or the basically to keep the pillowcase open. And I often use my hands, which my hands of course then end up wonderfully smelling like the plants, but also may get cuts and
that can scrapes. Be a good thing. Yeah.
Agreed. It shows that you're a true gardener, but definitely being safer, using gloves or potentially scissors and collecting the seeds. I often just kind of take off, you only want to take off the seed collection, the pieces where the seeds are, because you don't want to harm the rest of the plants
exactly.
by taking too much material. And a general conservation rule that is an internationally known standard is to only take 10% from a plant and the population in general mm-hmm. so that you're leaving seeds so that they can disperse naturally onto the landscape. And although there are some great exciting species like the saibara that we would love people may want to have in their garden, you really need to know your plants and what is collectible and non-collectible in your area. And like you were saying, the best time of year to go after the buckwheat would be in spring, fall, and other plants like our ironwood we collect in fall, winter, from those plants. So just knowing your plants when they bloom and then a few weeks to months later when the seeds are fully in full ripeness and maturity.
Because so many people are not used to the fact that summer on Catalina Island is the time of dormancy and winter is actually the time of growth and seed reproduction here as well as on the California mainland is too. Are there any plants where a cutting works to propagate?
Definitely. We are working with the Santa Barbara Botanical Garden doing cuttings actually of our ironwood, which is one of our endemic plants on this island that's found nowhere else in the world. It's a subspecies that's also found on Santa Cruz Island.
I don't remember which island.
One of the other islands also has ironwood.
I believe you're correct. It is Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm. We share a lot.
Cuttings of the ironwood. We also have done, we are actively doing cuttings of our Catalina currant, a ribes species. It has a very floral smell to it, and that is another plant that can be done from cuttings. I know there's many more plants that can be done from cuttings, but again, just making sure that you're doing it in a safe way and following the protocols of best management for that species. And there's information of the different types of, whether it's a dry or a wet growth hormone that you use for the cuttings as you grow them out.
Okay. And so when you're planting seeds, I'm noticing here your soil mix is a little bit heavier than what often is used as a soil mix, especially for those of us that propagate our vegetables from seeds. Tell us a little bit about the soil mix that you like to use for the natives here.
For the natives, we generally are using a 1-to-1 ratio of peat moss to perlite. Perlite is a volcanic, white, kind of almost chalky looking substance that you'll see in your normal soil that you would get from Home Depot or other places. It adds the fluffiness to the soil. The peat moss is a very dense material that comes from the northeast and is a very slow growth addition to our soil. So we generally do a 1-to-1 ratio, and then we add inoculants to help the plants as well as start growing. We use endomycorrhizal inoculants, which help with the non-woody species, and then ecto-inoculants would help with your woodier species like your oaks or your other maple trees.
And ironwoods and the species such as that. So you get your seeds into the ground, and then, of course, you have to water. And I would bet that the watering applications is a little different than what you would do with, say, propagating vegetables. Again, tell us a little bit about how you keep these seeds watered.
For the seeds that we have here at the nursery, we try to follow what you would kind of find out on the main landscape, which is kind of feast and famine watering. We give them a nice hard rain soak and really let them dry out as much as we can to harden the plant to get used to being out in the natural environment where they may not be watered on a daily or weekly basis. And our soil, like you were saying, is a denser soil. We use that type of denser soil so that the plants are getting used to having to struggle to get through the soil. Not impossibly struggle, but have a harder time getting through the soil here at the nursery because the ground of Southern California and also on this island is so much harder than you would have in your vegetable garden at home.
Yes, I believe you have a high clay content. The other thing I'm noticing is that you don't have covers over your seed trays, so that allows your plants to dry out. Is that correct?
The plants are grown, they do have covers when we have them in the propagation trays. That's okay. To keep insects and squirrels from getting into our baby propagules as they come up. And we do keep them under a 30% shade house structure so that they're not getting the full Southern California sun as we are propagating them here at the nursery. But as they grow up from just having their first two leaves of their cotyledon leaves and growing to a few inches of size, we then will move them into larger pots and harden them out in non-shaded areas before putting them out on the landscape.
I see. So that that keeps your plants growing and again mimics what the conditions are we get in Southern California. Do you fertilize or do you just use the inoculants?
We do also use a fertilizer. It's a 6-month fertilizer.
A slow release
6-month fertilizer so that we don't have to fertilize on a daily or weekly basis. We also use a root shield wettable powder on our baby propagules to help with their roots, to again add to the structure of their roots to make sure that the roots are growing nice and healthy and are getting the best type of native support as they can. There are many diseases like Phytophthora that can go after the roots and the plants and make them unhealthy, and that's why we really want to make sure we give them the best chance we can here at the nursery before we put them out on the landscape.
And so about what's your timeline and what's the size of when you're ready to plant it into the plant's native habitat, natural surroundings?
So for most of the plants, for the restoration work that we try to do here, 6 months to the 12 months, a lot of it works depending on what, so the uniqueness of our island, we have to cage just about everything, whether it's a tree tube or actually using a fence with rebar and keep it away. So the deer basically eat about, they eat a lot of the things we put in the ground. So the smaller it is, a lot of the times it has a benefit for it to get used to the soil around it, and then it can grow up pretty decent with that. We also grow out larger plants here as well for landscaping, and then it is nice sometimes to have the creative shade out as well to, in the field for restoration work. So
you actually do put a shade cloth or something over the little
tree? No, I have a larger tree actually give some of the shade. We don't have a lot of shade on the island, so helping some of the seedlings have some of the shade will actually really benefit them in the long term.
So what time of year do you actually put these natives out? I would imagine it's not in the heat of summer.
No, we're getting close. Monica's probably getting nervous because it's almost her go season. So I do a lot of the invasive plants and we're slowing down. And then this is the part where the native plant nursery, like they become really active out in the field. And so usually after the first real soaking rains, we might get a little bit of a rain, but until we've had a soaking rain. So last year, very different than possibly this year could be.
We're so far dry.
Yes. So hopefully soon would be the best answer for that one.
So if I'm doing my native, if I want to do native landscapes at my own home in Orange County, then I would want to plant more towards the November, December era, as provided there's been a heavy rain.
Correct.
And that's when I want to get them in the landscape. So I may not even want to buy my plants until then. So I want to get everything ready. So that's, again, a different way of, a lot of times we think about spring of planting our plants, and that might not work for our California natives.
One of the great things through the California Native Plant Society, they have a great website that shows all the different fall plant sales that are going on this time of year. Whether it's a different botanical garden, some of the UC schools or Cal State schools may have plant sales. And we just recently had our fall plant sale as part of the Avalon Fall Festival that happened last week.
Oh, so that's good to know. So I could come over from the mainland and buy a Catalina native here. And when is that usually held for our listeners to plan ahead for?
There are a spring festival and a fall festival. The fall festival usually is a few weeks before Halloween. They do sell pumpkins and other fall-related items. And then there is a spring festival, which I believe usually is in March, April time frame.
Good to
that,
know.
Plants can also be sold at those two festivals. We also have the ability for people to visit our website, catalinaconservancy.org, and search on the website for the nursery webpage. And we have an updated inventory that shows all of the native plants that we are currently growing here at the nursery.
Do you ever sell endemics at your plant sale?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Last week we sold the endemic Dudleya varinus hassii, which is our Catalina Live Forever. We also sold a Catalina Ironwood, which is the Limothalmus floribundus floribundus. That's so easy names for these plants.
Yes, these are.
So we definitely sold some endemics at the fall plant sale, and we've sold endemics as well at the other plant sales. And the great thing about the spring and fall festival, having that booth there and the other fall booths that are going on in Southern California right now, is it's a way to educate yourself on the native plants and learn what different conservancies or different programs are doing to have native plants and really get extra information about what would be beneficial in your garden that is native, to really go that native route in your garden for the reduction of water use that you would have, and also just to have plants that are used to and well adapted to the area.
Well, that's good to know, because so you can plan ahead if you want to bring some Catalina natives home to your own garden. And so this is a little bit of a break here. We're about midway through the show. So I have to remind you that the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the station, the university, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this show, visit KUCI.org. And you're listening to 88.9 KUCI in Irvine. But today we're here on Catalina Island with Ryan Murdoff and Monica Tidlaska of the Ackerman Native Plant Nursery here on the island. And we're going to continue our conversation learning about the Catalina endemics and California natives and how to bring those plants to gloriousness in your own garden and create a little bit of California landscape where you live. So I know that if you grow dudleas, for example, I've seen dudleas in native plant gardens on the mainland, but I know if you grow them, one of the things you have to be careful of is that you cut back on summer watering as these plants go dormant in the summer. So can you maybe go into detail and tell us a little bit about watering tips for the home gardener on California natives?
Sure. Plants like the dahlia definitely do not need water during the summer. That's when they're going into dormancy. They can end up looking a little bit shriveled. They are a succulent that can survive without water through the summer months. It's just best to check on your plants and make sure that when they are dormant, that's the best time to be looking to do your pruning as well, and make sure that if there's dead branches or you've already had your beautiful flowers come up, you can cut off the stems of where the seeds are coming from to take off the dying or diseased branches that may be rubbing on each other for larger trees like the toyon or lemonade berries or other plants that you may have in your gardens. And really make sure that you are following the best management for that plant through allowing it to naturally cycle with how they would be watered if you were not artificially supplementing their water.
And see, that's such an important point, and it's so counterintuitive to gardeners that we cut back water in the summertime and that we're aware of what we're doing with our water. So when you plant something into the natural environment here on the island, do you amend the soil at all before you put it into the ground?
Generally, we don't want to do a huge soil amendment, but when we do have the very thick, heavy clay soils in some areas, we will add some soil-building conditioner in around our plants. And generally, what we try to do is, if the plant is going to be a one-gallon pot, and you can imagine that being about 3 liters in size, we try to make our hole double that size in width and depth. So okay. It may be a hole that's 4 times as large, and that's where we use some of the soil from around the plant and maybe also that soil building conditioner to help augment the soil from being the rockier, muddier substrate of the native environment and to our little plant that we're putting in the ground. So that there is a kind of transition zone where we're mixing the native soil and some soil building conditioner and the soil from around the plant into the soil so that it's getting starting to adapt to the native soil and not just having a harsh edge. You can imagine that if you tried to grow just in a jar, something just in a jar, mm-hmm. it would perfectly go to the shape of the jar. But now when we are putting it in the native environment, we want it to be able to grow out into the space around it, and so we're giving it the ability
to send those roots out.
And we do sometimes break up the roots if it has created a root ball at the bottom.
So you would tease them, which is the same procedure you do with any plant in your landscape. So you want to follow that rule of thumb of twice as deep and twice as wide. And so I would want to amend it home to and probably any organic native planting mix or what I get at my native plant nursery would work in that amendment. So I want to follow that. And then I would imagine you don't use any kind of mulch covering at all.
It's something, hopefully, maybe not quite the mulches. We do a lot of brush clearance and things like that. So it's something we're kind of looking at for the future. So to get rid of some of the fuel load and stuff like that with the brush clearance, we might be starting to add some of that as well. And then with some of the lack or the ability not to be able to recycle everything on island, starting to use, you can use cardboard and things like that where you can cut holes like that. So it also help store water, but it'll also help prevent some of the invasive plants from coming up, which will make it more beneficial for the native plants to survive.
That sounds good. And Ryan, I know you talked about you work with the invasive species here. Can you tell us a little bit about the invasive species found on Catalina?
We have a lot. It's like most islands, just about anything that comes over from the mainland can actually, if it's not native here, can become invasive. So it's one of the harder parts that we try and work with. Even if it's genetics from a similar species, they can come here and they can actually change some of the genetics. So it's, call it like the biosecurity of the island. For the most part, one of the worst ones we have, if you're around Avalon, I would say around Avalon, it's probably 50% of the shrubs around the island is Genista linifolia. That is, I can't think of the common name.
Flax leaf broom?
Yeah, it's flax leaf broom.
I see.
And that one has definitely overtaken that. So with invasives, there's a couple different ways. There's eradication, and that's in hopes of, you know, small populations you can actually get rid of or hopefully get rid of. And then a lot of it is controlling. So we kind of, I like to say Avalon is quarantined, and we try and make sure that anything that's around Avalon does not get outside of the island. So outside of the island, we have a couple acres not fully, you know.
Infested, that's a good word.
Thank you. You said that, not me. with that, so you'll find this year we spent a lot of times underneath oaks and things like that, hand pulling seedlings. So just like the super bloom this year, we had a super bloom for invasives, but that one's the number one we go after. We also have in some of the small drainages, tamarisk, which is salt cedar. And if you're familiar with that in Arundo, we have very, very limited places that we have those. So we make sure that it's a vicious day for your knees and your back and your body, but it's a real helpful thing for the island to get to those.
Yeah, our natural wetlands on the mainland, Arundo, can be a big problem.
Yeah.
And it's being eradicated in many areas, as well as the tamarisk. And we look at those are big weeds. And I even noticed in one of your seed tree, you had a little bit of oxalis, which is a problem most Southern California gardeners have a problem with, and that tends to be very invasive and takes over.
On this island, it's only, it is throughout the island, but it's only in small populations, and it doesn't become truly invasive. It just kind of is a non-native growing out there.
So the invasives that you pull, do you incinerate them? Do you dry them out? Is there a process that you know that they can't propagate and get back into the natural area?
It depends on which ones we find. A lot of cerciums, I can't think of the common names today. The cerciums, and then we have the yellow star thistle, which we had eradicated on the island. It was here due to ranching from the 80s, 90s when it kind of became really prevalent across California. We actually had it eradicated on the island. So all the historic populations do no longer have that. And then this summer it's called EDRR, which is early detection, rapid response. So doing roadside surveys in places where it's likely something might come in. We found about maybe 12 or 13 plants
Okay, so when you do this eradication, do you take volunteers? Do you have employees? Who actually does the work?
We have a very dedicated and hardworking ACE volunteer group or interns that we have, just, and the nursery has them as well. And then we do get a lot of interns and then Boy Scouts, a lot of the camps and stuff like that. We've worked with them for the last, 15 years around those camps. So they do a lot of the weed work themselves, as well as they'll get stuff from the nursery and plant stuff.
So a Boy Scout or Girl Scout troop could come over here and do volunteer service, doing that and be able to camp on the island.
Yes.
Which, that maybe even a church group. So that would be an awesome opportunity, especially because I know when you visit the island, it's hard to get out of Avalon, or it's hard to get out of Two Harbors because they're pretty concise, and you have to have permits and things to come into the backcountry on the roads and things. So it's hard to see that, and it's another way to experience. So that's another thing. So could a garden club or somebody like that come over?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
We just recently had Sierra Club out on the island. They've come out, I believe, every year so far that I've been here, the 3 years. Boy Scouts, Girl Scout troops. One of the great benefits of the Conservancy owning so much of the island is that we actually have 2 volunteer camps where if you come volunteer a certain number of hours per day that of your stay, I believe it's 5 hours per day that you are spending over the night, we will work with you to get your group to one of our volunteer camps and help schedule your volunteer vacation out on the landscape, helping with invasives, helping with natives, helping with brush clearance, work in all sorts of different ways. We have Boy Scout groups that have come out, Girl Scouts, like I said, the Sierra Club. We also have a great alternate spring break time of year where a lot of schools from Ohio, Vegas, from California,
Florida,
Texas. They all will do their alternate spring break on the island for a week, aiding with our different projects. And it's an amazing way that college kids or even high school groups, church groups, can come out and spend time helping volunteer, whether it's their spring break or their winter break, especially winter break for me doing the native plantings. That would be a great time to have more groups come out this winter to help with the plantings.
So if you want to plant, you want to plan for winter, and more towards the fall and spring times is going to be weed pulling and brush clearing and that time of job. So if I wanted to bring a group up to volunteer here, where would I go to find out how to go about doing that?
So on our Catalina Conservancy website, on one of the little buttons on the bottom, it says volunteer. And we have the volunteer vacations in which you can stay at our campsites and volunteer, dedicate days to volunteering. Or if we had a family this July that came out, and they come out every July and they spend one of their days of their week here on the island volunteering with the Conservancy. And so we picked up 7 family members and took them out to one of the most remote places on this island and had them help with the pruning and watering and caretaking of some of our plants. So it's a really great opportunity through volunteering and finding that on our website to volunteer with the Conservancy.
So it sounds like, too, the other thing that's interesting is you said, I guess the first year you plant something back into the natural environment, you do give it some watering help as well.
Correct.
And volunteers would do that. So, again, if you're interested in coming over as a volunteer, it's CatalinaConservancy.org.
Correct.
Okay, and Catalina Conservancy is one word, so that's easy to find. And I'm sure you could Google it and find it out, too, because that might be an opportunity to see something where it is completely unique and you haven't traveled very far from your home. You don't even have to get on an airplane to come do this. But if I didn't want to volunteer, but yet I wanted to see some of these native plants, I wanted to see endemic plants, tell me where I could go to find those on the island.
So around Avalon, we have the trailhead. So Monica did a great job this spring getting a lot of our native and especially some of our like famed endemics into the trailhead. It's on the third floor. There's a couple other ones there that we have some really cool plants that we can see, or they can see throughout Avalon. There's a couple places that we have that. And then the Wrigley Memorial and Botanic Garden, which is about a mile and a half up the canyon. It's an easy walk, or you can, you know, rent something to get up there. We have a lot of the local native plants, endemics, and then we have a lot of really cool stuff from all over the world as well in there, especially cactus.
Oh, okay. And I know that botanical garden has been in existence since Wrigley's time, so it's over 80 years old, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. I believe there's a shuttle that goes up there, too.
Correct.
And I think that's even free, if I'm not mistaken. Or is it?
I believe it's $2 or $3 for the shuttle.
That's not bad. And what's the admission to the botanical
garden? I believe it's $8 for adults.
Okay. That's not too bad.
And if you become a conservancy member, whether you're at the booth to the entrance of the Wrigley Memorial and Botanic Garden, or from the conservancy trailhead building that's right off the boat when you come into Avalon, or off of our website, as a conservancy member, different levels of membership will give you free access for yourself and your family to the Memorial Garden as well.
Yeah, I noticed when I got off the boat today that right on my left, right as I was walking into Avalon, you can't miss it, is the conservancy trailhead. So visitors here, you'll be able to see native plants without going very far and get a look at what they are. And a lot of the endemics are up there too. And in addition to visiting the botanical garden, which is a special place and not hard to do with just the price of the ticket that you paid to come over and enjoy your day at the island. So if you've been here before and you're looking for something unique to do, you might want to take the botanical garden in. And I noticed the Wrigley Memorial is up there. Can you tell me a little bit about the Wrigley Memorial at all?
The Wrigley Memorial and Botanic Garden was originally cordoned off for the Wrigley family. One of the Wrigleys, I believe it was Wrigley Jr., was originally interned on that memorial. At the top of the memorial, he was interned there, and then there was space across from him for his wife, and then in the back wall was spaces for the children as they passed to be interned there on the island in the memorial and botanic garden. But over time, the wife and the family decided that because of the uniqueness of the plants being endemic to the island and also plants from around the world, it was worth uninterning the Wrigley husband and putting him at the family estate off the island, and opening up that Wrigley Memorial and Botanic Garden to the public so that you could go and enjoy the beautiful Catalina tile, learn about the history of the Wrigleys and their influence on the island, and also see all the beautiful plants there at the Botanic Garden. Another great thing is that if you come between Labor Day and Memorial Day, we have summer naturalists through our education department that are stationed at the Botanic Garden to give free tours.
Oh, okay, that's good to
know. So that you can learn more about the conservancy and about the plants there at the Botanic Garden. So
that's Memorial Day to Labor Day.
Memorial Day to Labor Day.
A lot of people get that
good.
One.
And I do know that, again, Catalina has a heavy clay soil, as many of us do in Orange County, and I know there was an active clay works here on the island. It was one of the industries. It's now closed, but they made a lot of very beautiful tile.
Yes.
And so a lot of that original tile, as you said, is at the Wrigley Memorial in the Wrigley Memorial.
Yeah, they're very beautiful.
Garden. And they're beautiful, and that's something else that people may want to get in to see. And so this facility we're at here at the James H. Ackerman Native Plant Nursery, can just a visitor come from the day, or do you really need to be a volunteer?
You definitely can come other ways. Our eco tours that start at the Trailhead Building in town, I believe it's the three-hour tour or the all-day tours, do come by here, and you can also request for your tour to have extra time here at the Ackerman Nursery. There are, beyond the volunteering efforts and the conservancy eco tours, you could take a taxi. It is a rather expensive taxi, but that is one way to get up here.
Okay, that's good.
Biking or backpacking. I've had backpackers intentionally not continue on the Trans Catalina Trail, but come up Middle Ranch Road to buy plants while backpacking.
Wow.
And they bought the plants, and we aided in delivery of the plants to Avalon for them. Or we've had backpackers and bikers as well have come through to purchase plants.
Wow, that is fabulous to know. So there are really a lot of ways to get back here and learn a lot about native plants, and then of course make your own garden native plants and enjoy gardening and create a better environment through that. And so for more information, again, you'd want to go to thecatalinaconservancy.org, and that will tell you everything you can do with plants when you come to Catalina Island and really learn a lot about this unique place as an island. It's been a pleasure, Ryan and Monica, for your interview today. Is there any last words you'd like to add for our listeners that we missed?
Come see the island. It's beautiful.
Okay.
And there are plants all year around that are blooming. You think potentially in fall there wouldn't be plants blooming, but the golden bush, the California fuchsia, and other plants are blooming right now. Even though it looks like a very dry landscape, there's beautiful plants to see blooming all year around.
Okay, and again, thank you for your time. This has been a wonderful day here visiting the nursery, and I've certainly enjoyed myself, and I know you will as well if you get the opportunity to come here.